Hi, everyone. Welcome back for a new episode of the Real Scary Podcast. Thank you so much if you're listening again, and welcome if you're a new listener. So it's been a while, but I am planning to be back to my usual schedule of every other Tuesday. So please bear with me as I adapt to my new recording conditions. I hope the audio is up to par, and I hope you're all staying safe and healthy. This episode is all about the old Ottawa jail. And get this, it is currently in operation as a hostel. So this is such a cool location, and I love that they found a really neat way to utilize this historical building. So as we all know, currently people are not traveling. We can't be together in large groups, and a lot of places and businesses are closed due to COVID-19. So sadly, the hostel cannot be booked at this time, but put it down on your haunted bucket list, your haunted road trip, and make sure that you check it out when things open back up, because this is a place you will not want to miss. This episode is unique in that we will be hearing from a very special guest throughout the episode. He is very knowledgeable about this location and its history, and that is because he's the creative director for Haunted Walk. Now, we've spoken about and with another employee of this awesome organization before. So if you'll remember, we spoke with someone from Haunted Walk in the premiere episode at Black Creek Pioneer Village. So today we'll get to hear from Jim Dean, and not only is he a 16-year employee with the organization, he is also the host of a podcast called Haunted Talks, which is the official podcast of the Haunted Walk. Jim has an awesome voice for podcasting, so this will give you a really nice preview into what you'll hear when you check out the Haunted Talk podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. So the Ottawa Jail Hostel was built in 1862 and has been revamped into a hostel. And it's really quite cool how they've successfully balanced modern amenities with this historical building. When I spoke to the manager, Erica, she told me about the variety of rooms that are available to book. There are dorm-style rooms, deluxe private suites, but the majority of the rooms are double or single occupancy, and these are the actual cells from the jail. So Erica says that this offers the most authentic experience, and I'm not kidding when I say, if you are claustrophobic, you may want to book one of the bigger rooms because they are tiny. The rooms are 3x9, and Erica said that they actually had to get mattresses custom fit. And tiny as these rooms are, they'll feel even smaller if a spirit decides to visit you in the night. I will have links to the website on my blog at realscarypodcast.ca, so make sure to check that out. Even if you can't book just yet, just take a look at the pictures. This is sure to be one of the coolest locations you'll ever have the pleasure of visiting. So right now I'm going to turn things over to Jim so he can tell you a bit about the history of Ottawa and why this jail was so needed at that time.
Well, when most people think about Ottawa today as Canada's capital, I think most people think about it as a kind of a clean, safe government town. I think it has that reputation, certainly across Canada, perhaps even greater around the world. But it was a very, very different story during the early days of the city. And the city did really build up around the construction of the Rideau Canal, which was used as a military route to kind of connect the St. Lawrence to the Great Lakes. But in those very, very early days, it was an extremely violent place. If any of you listeners have seen Martin Scorsese's film, Gangs of New York, There was a bit of that vibe going on here because the canals kind of divided the city in half. And then in Upper Town, which is closer to where Parliament Hill is today, you'd have the more wealthier English and Scottish settlers. And then in Lower Town, you would have the Irish and the French. Mm-hmm. And each of these different groups kind of had their own gangs. And these gangs would frequently fight. There's even one great story about how during a funeral procession for one, a member of one of these gangs, one of the rival gangs came and dragged the body out of the hearse, the wagon that was being used as a hearse, thrown overboard into the Rideau Canal. So it was an extremely dangerous place. No official police force or even volunteer force for the first 40 years or so. And the volunteer constables, when they did arrive, would often be very reluctant to take anyone to jail, which was in Perth, Ontario at that time, because on the way there, they would often be ambushed, and they would simply release the prisoners back to the other members of the gang. So when the jail was finally opened in 1862, it marked the first time there was kind of real law enforcement in the city. And that started to change the dynamics of what was going on.
Specifically with the Ottawa jail, how did that sort of become, you know, with all this volatility that was happening, how did they then decide, okay, we need this jail?
The realization that as the population began to grow, there had to be more built infrastructure to deal with those who were breaking the law. And there used to be an old jail. In the old courthouse, there was kind of a jail in the basement, but it was really inadequate, not big enough. So this new jail was built, 1862, a modern wonder of its day for Ottawa at that point. And it served in that capacity for 110 years until finally being closed in 1972. But what's interesting is that while in those very early days it was seen as this really modern piece of architecture, a modern way of looking at criminology, by the 1970s, certainly it was a relic. And it was closed partly because the living conditions were so inhumane. The small, single-person cells were incredibly small. I mean, you can't extend your arms fully on both sides, only about 9 feet deep, I believe. So really tight quarters, no washrooms, you know, they'd be using buckets and things of that nature, where they'd get to empty once a day, kind of thing. So even within the jail, the living conditions were extremely harsh. And we know the prisoners died in there, aside from executions, which we'll probably talk about, but also from things like disease, suicide, of course. If you've been in Ottawa in the winter, you know how cold it can get, and the conditions in the jail were not overly accommodating. So a real kind of a real tough place, but does kind of follow the story as Ottawa became the capital, began to transform into a more civilized society, you could say, and the jail was certainly a big part of that that transformation.
So clearly, this jail was such a necessity for the area. But we also learn a bit about the conditions, which, like a lot of jails at this time, were not great. You'd think, though, this is how a jail should be, in a way. You really want to make people not want to go to jail, because, of course, it's horrible. But what if a prisoner is innocent? And this is something that unfortunately happened, and let's be real, still happens a lot back then. So let's check back in with Jim, and he can tell us about some of the most famous prisoners and hangings from the Ottawa jail.
You can't talk about the jail without talking about the assassination of Thomas D'Arcy McGee. Now, McGee was a member of Parliament. Parliament had debated late into the evening, so it was the early morning hours of April 7th, 1868, and D'Arcy McGee walks home to his boarding house on Spark Street. And while he's unlocking the door there, a loud blast rings out. His landlady, who had just opened the door, her bedclothes are splattered with McGee's blood. She slams the door. She runs up the stairs to get help from some of the other boarders who are staying there. And when she come back down, they find D'Arcy McGee's dead body lying there on the front steps. And his false teeth, his actually teeth had been blown out through his mouth as he'd been shot right directly in the back of his head.
Wow.
Now, a very, very big deal. He was a beloved politician, really an excellent public speaker in particular. And so the outcry to find the murderer of McGee was headline news across the country. The assassination just steps from Parliament Hill. So the police start, you know, arresting all sorts of people, and one by one they are released until one man remains by the name of Patrick James Whelan. Now, Whelan was thought to be a Fenian, And the Fenians were an Irish national group whose plan seems very hard to imagine today, but their plan was to hold Canada hostage in exchange for Ireland's freedom.
Okay.
Given how big we are, it seems very improbable. But this was part of the plan, and Whalen was believed to have been a Fenian. He did have a Fenian newspaper in his pocket that night, and he also did attend the debates in the House on that evening.
Mm-hmm.
But the evidence against him was extremely circumstantial. For example, they found his revolver, which had recently been fired, which seemed like, kind of a literal smoking gun in the case, until the maid at his hotel he was staying at acknowledged she had accidentally shot herself in the arm while cleaning the room a few days earlier. The gun was very common. Even one of the police officers who was called to the stand to testify had to acknowledge that his own gun fired the same type of bullet that was removed from the doorway at the boarding house. One of the really only eyewitness who came forward had to acknowledge that a few days before he did, he said basically he would sell out his own family for the amount of reward money that was being offered for information. So you got all of this very, very circumstantial evidence. But the Prime Minister at the time, Sir John A. Macdonald, who was a close friend of Darcy McGee, began to attend the trial himself and would sit directly beside the judge. And you can only imagine how improper that would be, and the effect that would have upon the jurors and the judge in the case. Obviously, clearly one result being preferred, and Whalen was found guilty of the crime. And we've analyzed the evidence very carefully, and there's just no way he would have been found guilty today. There is not enough evidence, certainly for a capital case, and he was sentenced to death. So Whalen ends up spending his last days in the Ottawa jail on death row. He's kept in cell number 4, which we refer to as Whalen cell. February 11th, 1869, over 5,000 people gathered in a terrible snowstorm to watch this event. It really was kind of like a sick version of reality TV or something. As Whalen stood on the platform, he forgave all the sins committed against him and asked for forgiveness for the sins that he had committed. But he continued to maintain his innocence right up to the end. After his death, he was buried on the jail grounds. Against his wishes, against the wishes of his family. It's not consecrated ground there. So he was buried, despite his wishes, his wife's wishes, he was buried on the grounds of the jail, where his remains may still remain until today. The jail is situated right in downtown Ottawa, beside the Rideau Center. Today it's the Ottawa Jail Hostel. So it is actually a hostel where people can stay. And the top floor where death row has been, in the gallows, has been preserved. And as far as we know, it's one of the last working gallows in Canada. Thankfully, we don't use it too often. Even today, there's still this ongoing debate if he was guilty or if he was innocent.
Right.
And it really does seem like, he got a raw deal. An innocent man who was perhaps executed for a crime he did not commit, then buried against his wishes right in the jail yards. Now, when the Mackenzie King Bridge was built, which runs right alongside the jail, several remains were discovered there. Now, Whalen's may have been included in there.
Right.
And those bodies were reinterred in other local cemeteries. But for all we know, and we do suspect, there are more remains left under the parking lot today. And what makes this particularly fascinating is that one of Whalen's kind of final comments he made in the days leading up to his execution, he said that no grass would grow upon his grave. And certainly if he's under the parking lot today, that prediction may have come true. Whalen was one of three men officially executed at the jail. The other two are not nearly as well known, but their stories are quite interesting. The second man was William Seabrook, who shot a man named Paul Levine, who was working as a gas station attendant. And strangely, he actually called for a cab from the gas station after he shot the man, which is a surprising getaway strategy. But he was the second man executed in the jail. The final one is a very interesting character by the name of Eugene Larmont, who was executed in 1946. Now, Larmont was a rough, rough character. In and out of jail, his mother was also a known criminal. I mean, just a really tough life, and he definitely kind of followed that path. Now, he'd only been out of jail for less than 2 months when he shot and killed a police detective in October of 1945. Now, on the night of the murder, Larmont, two of his friends were seen breaking into cars when a detective saw them, and kind of a gun battle erupted in the middle of the street. Now, the guns they were using, they had actually stolen from the Canadian War Museum only a few days before, where they broke in as well. And during their trial, Larmont tried several defenses, first saying he was drunk, and then it was self-defense. His other two accomplices received life sentences while he received capital. Quickly about Larmont, we were doing some working with a spirit box on death row last year, just generally trying to communicate who was here, this kind of thing. And one of the very clear answers we got was his name. Just, you know, totally unexpected. And we actually were doing this on February 11th, which was the anniversary of Patrick Whelan's execution.
Okay.
So we found it very interesting that Larmont kind of came through.
Right.
But certainly the ghost stories primarily focus on Patrick Whelan.
So I don't know about you, but that story of Patrick Whelan is so tragic. To have so much doubt and to still be hung for this crime is really sad. So let me know what you think about the story. And I think it was just so interesting that his prediction or his curse, whatever it was, that no grass would grow on his grave and there is no grass where he would have been buried is super interesting and eerie. So the next thing I wanted to know from Jim was if he himself has ever had any paranormal experiences at this location.
I have stayed several nights. We often I'll do a staff event there and that kind of thing. We've even tried like a Ouija board up there, and you know, I'm not sure if I believe in Ouija boards exactly, but some interesting things happen. And I will say, just you know, having worked for the Haunted Walk now for about 16 years, and having had the opportunity to be alone on the top floor of that building many times, there is definitely something about it. I mean, it's, you know, the hair on the back of your neck stands up. It feels like you're being watched at times. And I do have two kind of personal experiences about the jail. The first being that during the Halloween season, I was up there one night, and I had a walkie-talkie. Because I would talk to our checkpoint person in the parking lot, you know, letting them know when the next group is okay to come in and that kind of thing. And, you know, occasionally we would get, you know, a little radio interference because the Queensway is not too far, the big highway, not too far away. But as I was standing there in the dark on the cell block, just waiting quietly, suddenly my walkie-talkie lets out something I can only describe as kind of like a deep demonic voice. I have no idea what it said, but the sound like literally caused me to like run out towards the light. Because it was so off-putting and unlike anything I had ever heard. Again, that could have been radio interference, but I never heard anything else like that while I was there. My very first year with the Haunted Walk, this was back when we used actual tea light candles inside our lanterns. We've stopped doing that for environmental reasons. But when we use these candles, you know, we would use them in the Ottawa weather, you know, the rain, the snow, the sleet, the occasional nice sunny summer day we get. But these things rarely, if ever, went out. But I did notice that when we were doing the tour, and I would take, if I had a small group, I would often take them directly into cell number 4. Which I mentioned earlier, is known as Whelan's cell, the last stop before the prisoners would be taken to the gallows. The candle would either go out or die down to like the faintest of blue colors. And this was happening enough, you know, that I began to get suspicious. I'm a fairly I'm a kind of a benevolent skeptic. Like, I really like to rule out all possible things before I'm willing to believe anything extraordinary.
Definitely.
So I decided it was time to perform an experiment as best as I could. And I had a small group, I think it was a grade 7 class from mm-hmm. outer town who was here. And before we got to that cell, I told them the story I just told you, how this had been happening to me. And I asked them if they wanted to help me with an experiment. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they were all very happy to agree. And I got their teacher to take the lantern and lead us into cell number 4. Now, as soon as she set foot in that cell, candle goes out immediately.
Weird.
The kids are all screaming. I'm trying not to scream. And it was just, you know, there's all sorts of potential things. Maybe it's a change in air pressure that occurs at exactly that one point. But it was just happening so often. The timing here so perfect that it was a very chaotic scene suddenly. And I had to do my best to try to calm everyone down. And as a group, we managed to convince ourselves that it was the wick in the candle that had burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And this nicely explained what was going on. Nothing supernatural, nothing paranormal. It was just a burnt out candle. And I did promise them that I would relight the candle as soon as I got back to our old ticket booth we had at that point to make sure that was the case. Well, when I got back to the ticket booth, I lit that candle, and it burned a good 10-15 minutes before I finally blew it out and had the courage to go home.
So aside from Jim's personal experiences, I also wanted to know what were some of the other common experiences and some of the other stories that have come from this location.
The most recurring kind of thing that happens, or something that happens quite frequently, is hostelers staying in the building, often being completely unaware of its haunted history. When they see us giving ghost tours there, as we do every night or so, they'll come up to us and say, you know, I just had this crazy thing happen to me, and then proceed to tell, you know, stories from the very mundane to the very spectacular. A lot of them do give a description of this figure that they see, who seems to very closely resemble Patrick Whelan.
Okay.
Some people see him sitting on the end of their bed reading a Bible, or mm-hmm. standing at the end of their bed. And Patrick Whelan does have a very distinctive look, and it's tragically funny that he almost looks like Will Ferrell with like a big fake beard on. A few years ago, one of our tour guides, he was waiting to start a tour there, and one of the hostelers came down, you know, pretty upset, saying she was not going to spend another night there. And, you know, our tour guide said, it'd be nice, try to help out, okay, you know, what happens, kind of thing. And this traveler was describing how their bed was kind of moving around and shaking during the night in a private room with mm-hmm. no one else there. So our tour guide actually helped them with their luggage to go stay at a hotel, you know, the next block down, because they were completely unwilling to stay there. Now, it's certainly not the case that every guest at the jail
right.
has a unique encounter, but some certainly do. I mean, one of our favorite stories to tell, there were four German travelers who were staying there who learned of its haunted reputation while in the building. And after the first night, they came downstairs and started demanding their money back. And, you know, the front desk person was like, okay, what's the concern? What's the problem? What's the issue? And they go on to explain that they hadn't seen a ghost, so they wanted their money back. Well, the person at the front desk is, you know, trying their best to say, okay, well, you paid for the night, for the accommodations. You know, we have no way of summoning ghosts on command.
Yeah.
When from the open cash register, a coin levitated up to eye level and held there for a good 5 seconds before
wow.
crashing back down into the register. All of them seeing this.
Yeah.
Apparently, the German guys took their bags and left. Apparently, they got exactly what they wanted at the jail.
Wow.
Another one of the eerie ones, one of the guides and their group experienced was up on the 8th floor there, we often use a chain to lock the cell block around the door so, you know, people can't sneak in and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we'll unlock the chain, and then it's a fairly heavy chain. You know, we hang it over one of the bars on the cell, so it just kind of sits there. We you know, we tell a story kind of in front of that doorway. Well, this entire group saw that chain, heavy chain, after being completely stopped for several minutes, start to swing on its own, inexplicably. Footsteps down empty hallways, extremely heavy cell doors that can seemingly open and close on their own. And people who tell us they are intuitive, or perhaps a little bit of psychic ability, will often tell us there is like another person joining us on the tour who no one else can see, you know? So it's all of these, many of the typical kind of haunting things you would see. But in the space is so unique because so many people experienced real pain and suffering there, death, disease, all of those things, and the executions on top of that. So it has, you know, all of the makings for a tremendous haunted location.
So as you can tell, there are many stories and experiences here. I'm sure there are many more, and probably many little things that maybe people didn't even notice as something paranormal. Now, as I had mentioned, Jim is the host of a podcast called Haunted Talks, which is the official podcast of Haunted Walk. Before we continue, I'd just like to read you all a statement that Jim sent me about the future of the Haunted Walk in this uncertain time. So Jim's statement reads as this. Hi, Elise, and to all of your wonderful Real Scary listeners. What a difference a few months can make. Since we spoke in February, the world is suddenly a very different place. Our last evening of tours was Sunday, March 15th. Since then, all of our tours have been suspended in Kingston, Ottawa, and Toronto. With zero revenues coming in, we have been forced to take drastic measure to survive. With no tours to give, on the hardest day in the company's 25-year history, we had to lay off all of our beloved tour guides, close to 100 of them, many whom we've had collaborated with for years. These are dire times for all who work in tourism and the entertainment industry. To give a sense of the crisis, a recent study released by Destination Canada indicates that 57% of tourism businesses in Canada are expected to close permanently by the end of May. We look forward to giving tours again as soon as it's safe to do so. Until then, we're trying everything we can to keep the business going. If you would like to help, please visit our website, hauntedwalk.com. From there, you can visit our new online gift shop, where we have our home and board rescue packs, as well as other fun and spooky surprises. Also on our homepage, you can purchase gift cards, which never expire and can be used when our tours return. Or if you would simply like to make a donation, any help is greatly appreciated. Take care and stay spooky, my friends. Jim Dean, Creative Director, Haunted Walks, Inc. So I will have links again to the Haunted Walk website and the gift shop. I've actually ordered some stuff for a giveaway I'm going to be doing in July, so stay tuned for that. But it is really scary, the future of some of these amazing businesses and a lot of places that we've already spoken about on this podcast. So really, if you know that you want to go on a tour, buy one of those gift cards. Like he said, they do not expire. Let's check back in with Jim now as he tells us about one of the many investigations that he's been a part of for this Haunted Talks podcast. This one that he's going to talk about in particular is from the Ottawa Jail Hostel.
We had someone on the tour of the old jail, our Ghosts and the Gallows tour. Someone took a picture of one of the display cases. And they said, and so this had some of the old jail artifacts in it. I'm not sure which case it was exactly. I'd have to go check. But, you know, we have like the jail log or perhaps, you know, devices they used for punishment, this kind of thing.
Right.
Now this person, 100% says they were the only person in the cell when they took that picture. But in the reflection from the glass case, you can clearly see the photographer and then another woman who appears to be wearing almost old-fashioned clothing. Okay. So I was determined, like, is there any way we can reproduce this? And we did a little kind of documentary about it to be like, is this, you know, what could possibly explain this? And we went through kind of the obvious things. Well, maybe the photographer was unaware that someone kind of stepped in the cell behind them just as they took that photo. Fortunately, there was no one else, according to the tour guide, no one else in the group who looked at all or was wearing clothing similar to this second person that was captured in the photo. Now, we tried, you know, positioning. Where would someone have to be positioned if, you know, we were standing where the photographer was with the camera? You know, where would someone have to be to appear in the reflection?
Right.
And we could never get it to look too close to what the photo actually looked like.
Very interesting. So
that case is like one where I do want to believe, and this one gives me a little more cause to. Because once you eliminate those obvious things, once you kind of put some real scrutiny behind it, you know, well, then suddenly it gets very, very interesting for me and for myself personally.
Yeah.
And as the host of, you know, of our Haunted Docs podcast, I've got to research a lot of different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And some things are really difficult to find easy explanations to. Now, I would never go so far to say that means something is absolutely paranormal. But I do think we have to be open to the possibility that we don't have a complete understanding of what the world even is yet. There's lots of things we're still learning as we go. Is the paranormal something we think of in the traditional sense? Are there the spirits of dead people around us?
Right.
Are these things we create ourselves from our own, from stimulations from the environment, you know, electromagnetic fields, vast changes in temperature, different sound waves? These things could all combine. So in some ways I'm more skeptical, but on the cases that are really difficult and hard to disprove, I believe those even more than I did before.
If you'd like to check out the Haunted Talks podcast, you can find them on hauntedwalk.com or by searching Haunted Talks on any major podcasting platform. Currently, there are 83 episodes, so be prepared to binge. I will also have a link up on the blog for the documentary they did investigating that strange image in the Ottawa Jail Hostel if you are interested. This brings us to the end of the episode. I would like to once again thank Erica from the Ottawa Jail Hostel and Jim Dean from Haunted Walk. I really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. Please make sure to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Real Scary Podcast and to check out the blog for more information, images, videos, links, extra little stories at realscarypodcast.ca. If you have any stories to share, ideas, or you just want to drop a line and say hi, you can reach me at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. The next episode will be out on May 26th, and I'll be talking about two Canadian historical sites connected to the fur trade. One is a very small place in Alberta that packs a big punch, and the other is a large historical site in Manitoba with a personal story that blew my mind. So until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.